What if I told you that everything you've ever wanted is not only possible, but that you actually deserve it? What if the only thing standing between you and the life you dream of is not your circumstances, not your background, not your education or connections, but simply the way you think about what you deserve? Right now, there are people living extraordinary lives. They have the relationships they want, the income they desire, the respect they command, and the freedom they crave. And here's what might shock you. Many of them are no more talented, educated, or connected than you are. The difference isn't in their abilities. It's in their mindset about what they deserve and their willingness to claim it. Most people live their entire lives accepting far less than what's possible for them. They settle for mediocre relationships, jobs that drain them, financial stress, and a nagging feeling that life is happening to them rather than for them. They've been conditioned to believe that wanting more is selfish, that they should be grateful for what they have, and that dreaming bigger is unrealistic. But what if that's the biggest lie you've ever been told? What if the very mindset that keeps you humble and grateful is also the one keeping you small and unfulfilled? Today, we're going to shatter every limiting belief you have about what you deserve and rebuild your mindset from the ground up. By the end of this journey, you won't just understand what you deserve. You'll know exactly how to get it. Chapter 1, The Deserve Gap. Why most people settle for less. There's an invisible force operating in your life right now that's more powerful than your education, your network, or even your work ethic. It's determining how much money you make, the quality of your relationships, the opportunities that come your way, and the level of respect you command. This force is what I call your deserve level. And for most people, it's set embarrassingly low. Your deserve level is the internal thermostat that regulates what you unconsciously believe you're worthy of receiving. Just like a thermostat maintains a specific temperature regardless of external conditions, your deserve level maintains a specific quality of life regardless of your efforts to improve it. And here's the brutal truth. If your deserve level is set low, you will unconsciously sabotage every opportunity that threatens to take you beyond it. Think about someone you know who seems to have chronic bad luck. They get promoted and then immediately make a mistake that gets them demoted. They start making good money and then make poor financial decisions that put them back where they started. They meet someone wonderful and then find ways to sabotage the relationship. This isn't coincidence. This is their deserve level in action, pulling them back to their comfort zone of limitation. The deserve gap is the space between what you're capable of achieving and what you actually allow yourself to have. For most people, this gap is enormous. They have the skills to earn six figures but accept five. They have the capacity for deep love but settle for surface level connections. They have brilliant ideas but never act on them because some part of them doesn't believe they deserve the success that might follow. This gap exists because from the moment you were born, you've been programmed with messages about your worth and what you should expect from life. Your parents, teachers, society, religion, and culture all contributed to setting your deserve level. And for most people, these influences installed a deserve level that's far below their actual potential. Maybe you grew up hearing money doesn't grow on trees or good things come to those who wait or don't get too big for your britches. Maybe you watched your parents struggle financially and concluded that's just how life is. Maybe you were taught that wanting more is greedy, that you should be satisfied with what you have, that people like you don't get to live extraordinary lives. These messages didn't just shape your beliefs about money or success. They shaped your fundamental understanding of what you're allowed to want and expect from life. They installed an internal program that automatically regulates your aspirations, your efforts, and your results to match what you unconsciously believe you deserve. The tragic irony is that the very humility and gratitude that society taught you to value may be the chains keeping you imprisoned in a life smaller than what's possible. While gratitude for what you have is important, using it as an excuse to not pursue what you want is a form of self-imposed limitation that serves no one. But here's what changes everything. Your deserve level is not fixed. It's not determined by your past, your circumstances, or your current reality. It's a program running in your subconscious mind. And like any program, it can be rewritten. The people living extraordinary lives aren't fundamentally different from you. They've simply calibrated their deserve level to match their potential instead of their programming. The first step in closing your deserve gap is recognizing that it exists. Most people never even question whether they deserve more than what they have. They accept their current reality as evidence of their worth rather than recognizing it as evidence of their programming. They look at their bank account, their relationships, their opportunities, and think this must be what I deserve. When the truth is this is what I've been conditioned to accept right now, your life is a perfect reflection of your current deserve level. Not your potential deserve level, not what you could achieve if you really tried, but what you currently unconsciously believe you're worthy of. And if you're not living the life you truly want, it's because your deserve level is set too low. The good news is that once you understand this mechanism, you can begin to change it. Chapter 2. The Programming Prison. How your past keeps you small. Every limitation you have about what you deserve can be traced back to a specific moment or series of moments when you learn that people like you don't get to have what you want. These moments created neural pathways in your brain that now operate as your internal programming, automatically filtering opportunities and possibilities through the lens of your past experiences. Your programming started before you could even speak. As a young child, you were like a sponge absorbing every message about worth, possibility, and limitation from the world around you. You didn't have the critical thinking skills to question these messages or the life experience to know they might be wrong. You simply accepted them as truth and built your entire understanding of reality around them. If your family struggled financially, you learned that money is scarce and hard to come by. If your parents had a troubled relationship, you learned that love is complicated and painful. If the adults around you seemed stressed and overwhelmed, you learned that life is hard and you should lower your expectations. These weren't conscious lessons. They were absorbed at a cellular level through observation and repetition. The most insidious part of this programming is that it doesn't feel like programming. It feels like reality. It feels like common sense. It feels like wisdom passed down from people who care about you and want to protect you from disappointment. But what felt like protection became a prison. And what seemed like wisdom became the walls that contain your possibilities. Consider how your family talked about money. Did they speak about it with stress, fear, or resentment? Did they say things like, "We can't afford that," or "Money doesn't grow on trees," or "Rich people are greedy"? Every one of these messages installed a program in your subconscious that money is scarce, difficult to obtain, and somehow morally questionable to pursue. Or think about how success was discussed in your household. Were successful people admired or criticized? Were they seen as lucky or hardworking? Were you taught that success comes through sacrifice and struggle or through strategy and smart decisions? These early messages created your template for what success looks like and what price you believe you must pay for it. Your programming also includes messages about your specific identity based on your gender, race, family background, or social class. You received both spoken and unspoken messages about what people like you can expect from life. You learned which dreams were realistic for someone with your background and which ones were beyond your reach. You internalized these limitations so completely that you now police your own aspirations without any external force needed. The programming doesn't stop in childhood. Every rejection, failure, disappointment, and setback reinforces the original programming. When you don't get the job, it confirms that you're not qualified enough. When the relationship doesn't work out, it proves that you're not lovable enough. When the business fails, it validates that you're not capable enough. Each negative outcome becomes evidence that your load level is accurate, rather than a temporary setback to learn from and overcome. This is why positive thinking alone doesn't work. You can't think your way out of programming that's been reinforced for decades. You can't use willpower to overcome beliefs that operate below the level of conscious awareness. You can't achieve lasting change by working harder when your internal thermostat is set to pull you back to familiar levels of limitation. But understanding your programming is the first step to changing it. Once you recognize that your current limitations are learned rather than inherent, you can begin the process of unlearning them. Once you see that your deserve level was installed by people who meant well but may have had their own limitations, you can start to question whether their programming serves your potential. The people who live extraordinary lives aren't free from programming. They've simply recognized that their original programming doesn't match their potential and they've made the conscious decision to rewrite it. They've stopped using their past as evidence of their limitations and started using it as contrast for what they want to create instead. Your past does not determine your future unless you allow it to. The messages you received about what you deserve were based on other people's experiences, fears, and limitations, not your actual potential. The programming that feels so real and permanent is actually just neural pathways that can be changed through conscious effort and repetition. Chapter 3. The Abundance Revolution, Shifting from Scarcity to Limitless. The difference between people who live extraordinary lives and those who struggle isn't talent, luck, or circumstances. It's the fundamental lens through which they view the world. Most people operate from a scarcity mindset, believing that there's not enough to go around, that someone else's success diminishes their own opportunities and that they must compete, hoard, and protect what little they have. But the people who consistently get what they want operate from an abundance mindset, understanding that there's more than enough for everyone and that success is not a zero-sum game. Scarcity thinking is so pervasive in our culture that most people don't even recognize it as a choice. It feels like reality. It feels like responsible thinking. It feels like the way things actually are. But scarcity is not reality. It's a perspective. And perspectives can be changed. When you operate from scarcity, you approach every situation from a position of lack. You focus on what you don't have, what might go wrong, and why something won't work. You see competition everywhere because you believe that resources are limited and other people's success takes away from your potential success. You make decisions based on fear rather than possibility. And you unconsciously create evidence that supports your belief that there's not enough. This scarcity programming shows up in every area of life. In relationships, you might believe that good partners are hard to find, that you have to settle for less than what you want, or that asking for what you need is too demanding. In Korea, you might believe that good jobs are scarce, that you have to take whatever you can get, or that pursuing your passion is unrealistic. In money, you might believe that wealth is for other people, that you have to choose between doing what you love and making money, or that wanting more is selfish. But abundance thinking completely transforms your experience of reality. When you understand that the universe operates on principles of abundance rather than scarcity, everything changes. You start to see opportunities instead of obstacles. You start to collaborate instead of compete. You start to give freely because you know that giving creates more rather than taking away from what you have. Abundance is not about denying practical realities or pretending that challenges don't exist. It's about understanding that challenges are temporary and that resources, opportunities, and solutions are infinite when you approach them with the right mindset. It's about recognizing that limitation exists primarily in thinking, not in reality. Consider the internet as an example. 30 years ago, if you wanted to start a business, you needed significant capital, physical location, and access to traditional distribution channels. The barriers to entry were high, and the opportunities were limited. But the internet created infinite possibility. Now, anyone with an idea and an internet connection can build a global business from their bedroom. The resources weren't limited. The thinking about what was possible was limited. The same principle applies to every area of life. There are more potential romantic partners in the world today than at any point in human history. There are more ways to make money, more opportunities to learn, more possibilities for travel and experience than ever before. The only limitation is in your thinking about what's available to you and what you deserve to pursue. Shifting from scarcity to abundance requires you to fundamentally change the questions you ask yourself. Instead of asking what if it doesn't work, you ask what if it does work. Instead of asking what if I'm not qualified, you ask how can I become qualified. Instead of asking what if there's not enough, you ask how can I create more. This shift also requires you to change your relationship with other people's success. In scarcity thinking, other people's achievements feel threatening because they seem to prove that there's less available for you. But in abundance thinking, other people's success becomes evidence of what's possible. When you see someone living the life you want, instead of feeling jealous or discouraged, you feel inspired and curious about how they created it. The abundance mindset also changes your relationship with failure and setbacks. In scarcity thinking, failure is evidence that you're not capable or that opportunities are limited. But in abundance thinking, failure is simply feedback that guides you toward what works. You understand that failure is not permanent and that every setback is preparation for a comeback. Perhaps most importantly, abundance thinking changes your relationship with asking for what you want. In scarcity thinking, asking feels risky because you believe that rejection proves there's not enough. But in abundance thinking, asking becomes a natural part of creating what you want because you understand that the worst thing that can happen is someone says no, which simply means you ask someone else. The shift from scarcity to abundance is not instant, but it's achievable. It requires you to consciously notice when you're thinking from limitation and deliberately choose thoughts that reflect possibility instead. It requires you to celebrate other people's success as evidence of what's available rather than evidence of what's not available to you. It requires you to take action based on what you want to create rather than what you want to avoid. Chapter 4. Internal worth versus external validation. The foundation of true confidence. One of the biggest obstacles to getting what you deserve is seeking validation for your worth from external sources instead of building unshakable confidence from within. Most people have their sense of value tied to their achievements, other people's opinions, their bank account, their relationship status, or their social media metrics. This creates a constantly fluctuating sense of self-worth that depends entirely on circumstances outside their control. When your worth is externally dependent, you become a victim of your circumstances. When things are going well, you feel valuable and confident. When things are challenging, you feel worthless and insecure. This emotional roller coaster not only makes life exhausting, but it also prevents you from taking the consistent action necessary to create what you want because you're too busy managing your emotional state based on external feedback. External validation is seductive because it provides immediate feedback about your value. When someone compliments you, likes your post, gives you a promotion, or chooses you for a relationship, you get an instant hit of worthiness that feels good. But this validation is like a drug. The more you rely on it, the more you need it. And the less capable you become of generating confidence independently. The people who consistently get what they want have learned to generate their sense of worth internally rather than seeking it externally. They understand that their value is inherent, not earned. They know that their worth is not determined by their achievements, their possessions, or other people's opinions. This internal foundation of worth gives them the confidence to pursue what they want without needing external permission or validation. Internal worth doesn't mean you become arrogant or disconnected from feedback. It means you maintain a stable sense of value regardless of external circumstances. It means you can receive criticism without it destroying your confidence, and you can receive praise without it inflating your ego. It means you make decisions based on what aligns with your values and desires rather than what will generate the most approval. Building internal worth requires you to separate your identity from your results. Your value as a person is not determined by how much money you make, what job you have, who you're in a relationship with, or what you've accomplished. These things are expressions of your choices and efforts, but they are not measures of your inherent worth as a human being. This separation is crucial because when your identity is tied to your results, you become afraid to take risks that might threaten those results. If your worth depends on being successful, you'll avoid opportunities where you might fail. If your value depends on being liked, you'll avoid expressing opinions that might be controversial. If your confidence depends on being perfect, you'll avoid trying anything where you might make mistakes. Internal worth also requires you to develop what psychologists call an internal locus of control. This means you take responsibility for your experiences while recognizing that your worth is not determined by those experiences. You understand that you have the power to influence your outcomes through your choices and actions, but you don't use those outcomes as evidence of your value as a person. People with strong internal worth are willing to fail because they understand that failure doesn't diminish their value. They're willing to be rejected because they know that rejection is not a commentary on their worth. They're willing to be criticized because they understand that criticism is information, not judgment. This willingness to experience uncomfortable emotions without it threatening their sense of self is what allows them to take the actions necessary to create what they want. Building internal worth is a practice, not a destination. It requires you to consciously notice when you're seeking external validation and redirect your attention to internal sources of value. It requires you to celebrate your efforts rather than just your results. It requires you to speak to yourself with the same kindness and respect you would show to someone you love. One powerful practice for building internal worth is to regularly acknowledge yourself for who you're becoming rather than just what you're achieving. Notice when you choose courage over comfort, growth over safety, or authenticity over approval. These choices reveal your character and values, which are far more reliable sources of worth than external achievements that can fluctuate. Another practice is to develop a personal mission or set of values that guide your decisions regardless of external feedback. When you know what you stand for and what matters to you, you can maintain confidence even when others disagree with your choices. Your worth becomes anchored in your alignment with your values rather than your alignment with other people's expectations. Internal worth also requires you to forgive yourself for past mistakes and failures. If you're carrying shame or regret about previous decisions, you're allowing your past to determine your current sense of value. Understanding that mistakes are part of learning and growth rather than evidence of inadequacy is essential for maintaining stable self-worth. The goal is not to become independent of all external feedback, but to become internally anchored enough that external feedback informs rather than determines your sense of worth. When you have strong internal worth, you can receive compliments without becoming dependent on them and criticism without becoming devastated by them. You can pursue ambitious goals without needing to succeed to feel valuable. And you can enjoy achievements without needing them to feel worthy. Chapter 5. The psychology of asking why you don't get what you don't request. One of the most overlooked reasons people don't get what they deserve is simply that they never ask for it. They hope someone will notice their hard work and reward them accordingly. They wait for opportunities to find them rather than seeking opportunities themselves. They expect others to read their minds and provide what they need without them having to explicitly request it. But the uncomfortable truth is that most of what you want in life requires you to ask for it. And most people are terrible at asking. The inability to ask for what you want stems from deep psychological programming about worthiness, rejection, and social dynamics. From childhood, many people learn that asking for things is selfish, demanding, or inappropriate. They're taught to wait patiently, to be grateful for what they receive, and to not rock the boat by expressing desires that might inconvenience others. This programming creates what psychologists call learned helplessness around asking. People become so afraid of rejection, so convinced they don't deserve what they want, or so worried about being seen as demanding that they simply stop asking altogether, they suffer in silence rather than risk the discomfort of a potential no. But here's what most people don't understand. Asking is not taking. Asking is offering someone the opportunity to say yes to something that might benefit both of you. When you ask for a raise, you're offering your employer the opportunity to invest in keeping a valuable employee. When you ask someone on a date, you're offering them the opportunity to explore a potentially wonderful connection. When you ask for help, you're offering someone the opportunity to contribute to your success. The people who consistently get what they want understand that asking is a skill that can be developed and that rejection is not a reflection of their worth, but simply information about timing, fit, or priorities. They've learned to separate their self-esteem from the outcomes of their requests and to see asking as a necessary part of creating what they want rather than an uncomfortable last resort. Effective asking requires you to understand the psychology of decision-making. People say yes to requests when they believe it will benefit them in some way, when they have the capacity to fulfill the request, and when they trust and like the person making the request. This means that successful asking is not about convincing or manipulating, but about clearly communicating value and making it easy for the other person to say yes. The first component of effective asking is clarity about what you want. Many people make vague requests that leave the other person confused about exactly what they're being asked to do. Instead of saying, "I'd like more responsibility at work," you might say, "I'd like to lead the new product launch initiative and would appreciate your recommendation to the leadership team." Specific requests are easier to evaluate and more likely to receive a clear response. The second component is timing. Asking when someone is stressed, distracted, or dealing with competing priorities significantly reduces your chances of success. Effective askers pay attention to timing and create or wait for moments when the other person is in a receptive state of mind. They also understand that sometimes the first ask is simply to schedule time to make the real ask. The third component is framing your request in terms of value for the other person. Instead of focusing on why you need or want something, focus on why granting your request would benefit them. When asking for a raise, don't just explain your financial needs. Explain how your continued growth and satisfaction will benefit the company. When asking for help, don't just express your struggles. Explain how helping you might be interesting, meaningful, or beneficial for the other person. The fourth component is making it easy to say yes. This means being specific about what you're asking for, flexible about how it gets delivered, and respectful of the other person's constraints. It also means being prepared to handle objections or concerns and having alternatives ready if your first request isn't feasible. Perhaps most importantly, effective asking requires you to be comfortable with rejection. The fear of hearing no prevents most people from asking for what they want. But rejection is simply part of the process of finding people who are aligned with what you're seeking. Every no brings you closer to a yes. And every rejection is information that helps you refine your approach or find better aligned opportunities. The psychology of asking also includes understanding that most people actually want to help when they can. Humans are wired for cooperation and contribution. And many people feel good about being able to support others' success. Your reluctance to ask might actually be depriving others of the opportunity to contribute in ways that would be meaningful for them. Developing your asking skills requires practice and deliberate exposure to rejection. Start with small, low-stakes requests to build your comfort with the process. Ask for discounts, upgrades, recommendations, or small favors. Notice that rejection doesn't kill you and that many people are more willing to help than you expected. Remember that asking is not about convincing someone to do something they don't want to do. It's about clearly communicating opportunities for mutual benefit and allowing the other person to make an informed decision. When you approach asking from this perspective, it becomes an act of service rather than an act of selfishness. Chapter 6. Breaking the guilt barrier. Why you're allowed to want more. One of the most insidious blocks to getting what you deserve is the guilt that surrounds wanting more than what you currently have. This guilt is so deeply embedded in most people's psychology that they don't even recognize it as the primary force sabotaging their success. They've been conditioned to believe that wanting more is selfish, that being satisfied with less is virtuous, and that pursuing their desires somehow takes away from others who have less. This guilt programming usually starts in childhood with well-meaning adults who taught you to be grateful for what you have, to not be greedy, and to think about people who are less fortunate. While gratitude is indeed important when it's used as a weapon against ambition, It becomes a prison that keeps you trapped in mediocrity while making you feel virtuous about your limitations. The guilt manifests in countless ways. You might feel bad about wanting a nicer home when others are homeless. You might feel selfish for wanting a higher income when others struggle financially. You might feel guilty about pursuing your dreams when others have given up on theirs. This guilt creates an internal conflict where part of you wants to grow and achieve while another part judges those desires as inappropriate or wrong. But here's the truth that will set you free. Your success does not diminish others' opportunities. Your wealth does not make others poor. Your happiness does not make others sad. Your achievement does not make others fail. The world does not operate on a limited supply of success where someone else's gain requires your loss. In fact, the opposite is true. When you operate at your highest potential, you create value that benefits everyone around you. When you earn more money, you contribute more to the economy. Create more opportunities for others and have more resources to help those you care about. When you pursue your dreams, you inspire others to pursue theirs. When you refuse to settle for less than you deserve, you give others permission to do the same. The people who have made the greatest positive impact on the world were not those who settled for mediocrity out of guilt. They were those who pursued their highest potential and used their success as a platform to serve others. They understood that playing small doesn't serve anyone and that their greatest contribution comes from being their best selves, not their most limited selves. Consider the most successful and influential people throughout history. They didn't apologize for their ambition or feel guilty about their achievements. They understood that their success created opportunities for others rather than taking opportunities away. They used their platforms, resources, and influence to make positive changes that benefited countless people. The guilt around wanting more also stems from a misunderstanding about the nature of desire itself. Desires are not random or meaningless. They are signals from your higher self about what you're capable of creating and contributing. When you feel drawn to achieve something, build something, or become something, that desire exists because you have the potential to make it real. Suppressing your desires out of guilt is actually a form of spiritual bypassing that prevents you from fulfilling your purpose. You were not put on this earth to play small, to settle for less, or to apologize for wanting to express your full potential. You were put here to create, contribute, and become the fullest expression of who you're capable of being. The guilt also prevents you from receiving what others want to give you. When you feel guilty about having good things happen to you, you unconsciously push away opportunities, compliments, help, and abundance that naturally flows toward you. You become so focused on not having more than others that you reject the very things that would allow you to contribute more meaningfully. Breaking through guilt requires you to reframe your relationship with success and abundance. Instead of seeing your achievements as taking away from others, see them as contributing to the collective good. Instead of feeling bad about having opportunities, feel grateful and responsible for using those opportunities wisely. Instead of apologizing for your desires, honor them as guidance toward your highest contribution. This doesn't mean becoming selfish or inconsiderate of others. It means understanding that true service comes from operating at your highest potential, not from diminishing yourself to make others comfortable. It means recognizing that the world needs people who are willing to pursue excellence, create value, and model what's possible. The guilt barrier also requires you to examine the difference between taking and creating. Taking mindset operates from scarcity and believes that getting something requires taking it away from someone else. Creating mindset operates from abundance and understands that value can be generated, opportunities can be multiplied and success can be shared. When you create value through your work, relationships and contributions, you expand the total amount of good in the world rather than redistributing a fixed amount. When you solve problems, serve others, and express your talents, you make the pie bigger rather than taking a larger slice of the existing pie. Breaking the guilt barrier requires you to take responsibility for the positive impact your success can have. Instead of feeling guilty about your achievements, feel accountable for using them wisely. Instead of apologizing for your abundance, commit to leveraging it for good. Instead of hiding your success, let it inspire others to pursue their own. The people who get what they deserve have learned to want without guilt, to achieve without apology, and to receive without shame. They understand that their success is not a commentary on others' failures and that their abundance is not evidence of others' lack. They've made peace with their desires and committed to using their achievements as a force for good in the world. Chapter 7. Energy and Presence. How you show up determines what shows up. There's an invisible force that determines whether opportunities come to you or pass you by. Whether people are drawn to you or repelled by you, whether life feels like it's working for you or against you. This force is your energy. And most people are completely unconscious of how their energy affects every aspect of their experience. Your energy is the vibration you emit based on your thoughts, emotions, beliefs, and internal state. It's the unspoken communication that happens before you say a word. The feeling people get when they're around you and the magnetic force that either attracts or repels the experiences you want to have. People who consistently get what they want understand that managing their energy is just as important as managing their actions. They know that showing up with the right energy can open doors that no amount of strategy or effort can open. While showing up with the wrong energy can close doors that should naturally be available to them. Think about someone you know who seems to effortlessly attract opportunities, relationships, and positive experiences. When you're around them, you feel inspired, energized, and optimistic. They have a presence that makes people want to help them, include them, and support their success. This isn't luck or coincidence. This is the result of consciously cultivating an energy that aligns with what they want to create. Now, think about someone who seems to struggle despite their best efforts. They work hard, have good intentions, and take action. But somehow things never seem to work out for them. When you're around them, you might feel drained, anxious, or pessimistic. Their energy repels the very things they're trying to attract, creating a cycle of struggle that reinforces their limiting beliefs. The difference between these two people isn't talent, luck, or circumstances. It's the energy they bring to every situation. One person's energy says, "I expect good things to happen." While the other person's energy says, "I expect things to be difficult." And the universe responds accordingly. Your energy is determined by your internal state, which is created by your thoughts, beliefs, and emotional patterns. When you're operating from fear, doubt, desperation, or scarcity, you emit an energy that repels what you want. When you're operating from confidence, optimism, abundance, and certainty, you emit an energy that attracts what you want. This isn't mystical thinking. This is practical psychology. People can sense your internal state through micro-expressions, body language, tone of voice, and countless other subtle cues. When you're desperate for a job, employers can sense that desperation and it makes you less attractive as a candidate. When you're needy in relationships, potential partners can feel that neediness and it pushes them away. When you're operating from scarcity with money, you make decisions that create more scarcity. But when you're confident in your value, people want to hire you. When you're complete within yourself, people are drawn to you romantically. When you're operating from abundance, you make decisions that create more abundance. Your internal state creates your external reality through the energy you emit and the actions you take from that energy. Managing your energy requires you to become conscious of your internal state and deliberately choose thoughts and emotions that align with what you want to create. This doesn't mean denying negative emotions or pretending everything is perfect. It means processing negative emotions quickly and returning to a positive expectant state as your default setting. One of the most powerful energy shifts you can make is moving from need to preference. When you need something to happen, your energy becomes desperate and attached, which repels what you want. When you prefer something to happen but know you'll be fine either way, your energy becomes magnetic and attractive. This shift from need to preference requires you to build internal security and confidence that's not dependent on external outcomes. Another crucial energy shift is moving from taking to giving. When your energy is focused on what you can get from situations and people, you emit a taking energy that makes others want to protect themselves from you. When your energy is focused on what you can contribute, you emit a giving energy that makes others want to include you and support you. The energy of gratitude is also transformative. When you genuinely appreciate what you already have, you emit an energy that attracts more good things. When you focus on what's missing or wrong, you emit an energy that attracts more problems and limitations. Gratitude isn't just a nice practice. It's a practical tool for shifting your energy in a direction that serves your goals. Confidence is perhaps the most attractive energy you can cultivate. Not arrogance, which is overcompensation for insecurity, but genuine confidence based on self-awareness and self-acceptance. Confident energy says, I know who I am. I'm comfortable with myself and I trust that things will work out well. This energy is magnetic because it makes others feel safe and inspired around you. Your energy also affects how you interpret and respond to situations. When you're in a positive, expectant state, you notice opportunities that were always there but previously invisible to you. You approach challenges with creativity and resourcefulness. You attract people who want to help you succeed. When you're in a negative, fearful state, you miss opportunities because you're focused on problems. You approach challenges with anxiety and limitation. You attract people who reinforce your fears and doubts. Cultivating positive energy is a daily practice that requires conscious attention to your thoughts, emotions, and physical state. It means starting each day by deliberately choosing your internal state rather than letting your circumstances determine how you feel. It means regularly returning to gratitude, confidence, and optimism throughout the day, especially when challenges arise. The goal is not to be positive all the time, which would be inauthentic and unsustainable. The goal is to develop the skill of consciously shifting your energy when it's not serving you, and maintaining an overall energetic state that aligns with what you want to create in your life. Chapter 8. The Courage Factor. Taking action despite fear. Fear is the ultimate dream killer. The silent assassin of potential and the invisible prison that keeps most people trapped in lives far smaller than what they're capable of creating. Every limitation you have, every goal you haven't pursued, every opportunity you've missed can be traced back to fear in some form. And until you learn to act in the presence of fear rather than waiting for it to disappear, you'll remain stuck in the gap between where you are and where you deserve to be. The biggest lie most people believe about fear is that brave people don't feel afraid. They think that successful people have somehow eliminated fear from their experience and that's why they're able to take bold action. But the truth is that everyone feels fear when they're moving towards something important. The difference is that some people let fear stop them while others use fear as a signal that they're moving in the right direction. Fear serves an important biological function. It's designed to keep you safe from physical threats and help you survive dangerous situations. But in the modern world, most of the fears you experience aren't about actual physical danger. They're about psychological threats like rejection, failure, embarrassment, or judgment. These fears feel just as real and intense as physical threats, but they can't actually harm you. The problem is that your brain doesn't distinguish between real threats and imagined ones. When you think about asking for a raise, starting a business, or approaching someone you're attracted to, your nervous system responds as if you're facing a life-threatening situation. Your heart races, your palms sweat, and every instinct tells you to avoid the danger. But the danger is imaginary. And avoiding it keeps you trapped in mediocrity. Understanding that fear is often a compass pointing toward what you most need to do is the first step in changing your relationship with it. The things you're most afraid of are usually the things that would create the biggest positive changes in your life. You're afraid to start the business because success would change everything. You're afraid to end the relationship because freedom would require you to create a new life. You're afraid to ask for what you want because getting it would mean taking responsibility for your power. The people who consistently get what they want have learned to reinterpret fear as excitement rather than danger. They understand that the physical sensations of fear and excitement are nearly identical. The racing heart, the heightened awareness, the surge of energy can all be interpreted as your body preparing you for something important rather than warning you away from it. This reframe requires you to question the stories your mind tells you about what fear means. Instead of "I'm afraid, so I shouldn't do this," you learn to think "I'm afraid, so this must be important." Instead of "what if it goes wrong," you ask "what if it goes right." Instead of "I'm not ready," you recognize "I'll never feel completely ready for something I've never done before." Courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is feeling the fear and taking action anyway. It's acknowledging that you're afraid while refusing to let that fear make your decisions for you. It's understanding that the pain of staying stuck is ultimately greater than the temporary discomfort of moving through fear. Most people try to eliminate fear before taking action. But this approach keeps them waiting indefinitely because fear doesn't disappear when you're doing something important. Fear dissolves through action, not through thinking or preparing. The more you act in the presence of fear, the more you realize that fear is just a feeling, not a fact about reality. Building your courage muscle requires you to regularly do things that scare you. Start with small acts of courage and gradually work your way up to bigger ones. Make the phone call you've been avoiding. Have the conversation you've been putting off. Apply for the opportunity you don't think you're qualified for. Each act of courage builds evidence that you can handle fear and that taking action despite fear leads to growth and opportunity. One of the most effective ways to move through fear is to get specific about what you're actually afraid of. Most fear is vague and abstract, which makes it feel overwhelming and insurmountable. But when you get specific about your fears, you can usually see that they're not as dangerous as they seemed. Are you afraid of rejection? Remember that rejection is just someone saying they're not interested, not a commentary on your worth. Are you afraid of failure? Consider that failure is just feedback that helps you improve, not evidence that you're incapable. Are you afraid of success? Recognize that success is just the result of your efforts, not a burden that will destroy your life. Another powerful tool for moving through fear is to focus on the cost of not taking action. What will your life look like in 5 years if you let fear continue to make your decisions? What opportunities will you miss? What experiences will you never have? What potential will remain unexpressed? Often the pain of staying stuck is far greater than the temporary discomfort of moving through fear. Fear also diminishes when you have a compelling vision of what you want to create. When your desire for something is stronger than your fear of what might go wrong, action becomes natural. This is why clarity about what you want is so important. Vague desires are easily defeated by specific fears, but specific desires can overcome vague fears. The goal is not to become fearless because fear often signals that you're pushing your boundaries and growing. The goal is to become fear-friendly. To develop a healthy relationship with fear that allows you to move through it rather than being paralyzed by it. Remember that on the other side of your fear is everything you've ever wanted. Every person living an extraordinary life had to move through the same fears you're experiencing. They felt the doubt, the uncertainty, and the temptation to stay safe. But they chose action over comfort, growth over safety, and possibility over security. And because they were willing to feel afraid while taking action anyway, they created lives that most people only dream about. Chapter 9. The Compound Effect of Self-Worth. How small shifts create massive changes. The most profound transformations in life rarely happen through dramatic overnight changes. They happen through the compound effect of small consistent shifts in how you think about yourself and what you deserve. Just like compound interest in finance, small improvements in your self-worth and mindset create exponential results over time, leading to changes so dramatic that they seem almost magical to outside observers. Most people underestimate the power of small changes because they're focused on immediate results rather than long-term transformation. They want to see dramatic shifts right away. And when those shifts don't materialize, they conclude that change is impossible or that they're not capable of transformation. But the people who create extraordinary lives understand that transformation is a process, not an event. Consider how compound interest works with money. If you invest $1,000 at 10% annual interest, after 1 year, you have $1,100. The $100 gain doesn't seem impressive, but if you leave that money invested and continue adding to it regularly, after 10 years you have over $25,000. After 20 years, you have over $67,000. The growth seems slow at first, but it accelerates dramatically over time. The same principle applies to personal transformation. Small daily improvements in your self-talk, your standards, your actions, and your beliefs seem insignificant in the moment. But over months and years, these small shifts compound into profound changes in your life experience, your opportunities, and your results. This compound effect explains why some people seem to effortlessly attract success while others struggle despite their best efforts. The successful people aren't necessarily more talented or harder working. They've been making slightly better choices consistently over time, and those choices have compounded into dramatically different life experiences. The compound effect of self-worth begins with how you speak to yourself. Most people have an internal dialogue that's harsh, critical, and focused on limitations. They constantly remind themselves of their past failures, their current shortcomings, and their fears about the future. This negative self-talk compounds over time, creating deep neural pathways that reinforce limitation and low self-worth. But when you begin to speak to yourself with kindness, encouragement, and possibility, even that small shift begins to compound. At first, the positive self-talk might feel forced or inauthentic, but as you practice it consistently, it begins to feel more natural over time. This positive internal dialogue creates new neural pathways that support confidence and high self-worth. The compound effect also applies to your standards and expectations. When you slightly raise your standards for how you want to be treated, what opportunities you'll accept, and what behavior you'll tolerate from yourself and others, you begin to attract different experiences. These higher standards feel uncomfortable at first because they require you to say no to things you might have previously accepted. But as you maintain these higher standards consistently, they begin to feel normal. You start to expect better treatment, better opportunities, and better results. And because you expect more, you unconsciously behave in ways that make more likely to receive it. Over time, these slightly higher standards compound into dramatically improved life experiences. The choices you make about how to spend your time also compound dramatically. Spending 30 minutes a day reading personal development books doesn't seem like much, but over a year, that's over 180 hours of learning. Over 5 years, that's over 900 hours. The knowledge and mindset shifts from that investment compound into wisdom, opportunities, and capabilities that transform your entire trajectory. Similarly, small improvements in how you take care of yourself compound over time. Exercising for 20 minutes a day, eating slightly healthier foods, getting better sleep, and managing stress more effectively might not create dramatic changes immediately. But over time, these habits compound into dramatically improved energy, confidence, and overall life experience. The compound effect also applies to relationships and networking. Making an effort to connect with one new person each week doesn't seem significant, but over a year, that's 52 new connections. Over 5 years, that's over 250 people in your network. Some of these connections will lead to opportunities, partnerships, friendships, and possibilities that you can't even imagine from your current perspective. Perhaps most importantly, the compound effect applies to your identity and self-concept. Each time you keep a commitment to yourself, you build evidence that you're someone who follows through. Each time you choose growth over comfort, you reinforce your identity as someone who's committed to improvement. Each time you act in alignment with your values, you strengthen your sense of integrity and self-respect. These identity shifts might seem small in the moment, but they compound into profound changes in how you see yourself and how you show up in the world. Over time, you begin to identify as someone who deserves good things, who's capable of achieving big goals, and who naturally attracts positive experiences. The key to leveraging the compound effect is consistency rather than intensity. It's better to make small improvements every day than to make dramatic changes that you can't sustain. It's more effective to read for 15 minutes daily than to read for 5 hours once a month. It's more powerful to exercise for 20 minutes consistently than to have intense workout sessions sporadically. This requires you to shift your focus from dramatic transformation to daily progression. Instead of trying to completely reinvent yourself overnight, focus on becoming 1% better each day. Instead of waiting for motivation to create massive change, commit to small, consistent actions that you can maintain regardless of how you feel. The compound effect requires patience and faith because the results aren't immediately visible. Just like a bamboo plant that grows very little above ground for years before shooting up dozens of feet in a matter of weeks, your transformation might seem slow at first before accelerating dramatically. Trust the process. Trust that small consistent improvements in your self-worth, your standards, your habits, and your actions will compound into extraordinary results over time. The person you're becoming through these daily choices is far more important than any immediate outcome you might achieve. Chapter 10. Identity Transformation. Becoming the person who naturally receives what you want. The deepest level of change happens not when you modify your behavior or even your beliefs, but when you transform your identity. Your identity is the story you tell yourself about who you are. And this story determines everything else in your experience. When you truly change your identity, you don't have to force yourself to act differently because different actions become natural expressions of who you now are. Most people try to create change from the outside in. They focus on changing their circumstances, their habits or their results while leaving their core identity unchanged. But lasting transformation happens from the inside out when you change who you believe you are. Everything else changes automatically to match that new identity. Think about someone who identifies as an athlete. They don't have to force themselves to exercise because physical activity is simply what athletes do. They don't struggle with motivation because staying in shape is part of their identity. They make decisions about food, sleep, and time management based on what supports their athletic identity. Their behavior flows naturally from their sense of self. Now think about someone who identifies as someone who struggles with their weight. Even when they start eating healthier and exercising, part of their identity is still anchored in struggle. They might lose weight temporarily, but because their core identity hasn't changed, they unconsciously behave in ways that bring them back to their familiar identity as someone who struggles with weight. This same pattern applies to every area of life. If you identify as someone who's bad with money, you'll unconsciously make financial decisions that reinforce that identity. If you identify as someone who's unlucky in love, you'll unconsciously choose partners or behave in relationships in ways that confirm that identity. If you identify as someone who doesn't deserve success, you'll unconsciously sabotage opportunities that threaten that identity. The people who get what they deserve have learned to consciously design their identity rather than unconsciously accepting whatever identity was installed by their experiences. They understand that identity is not fixed but is actually a story that can be rewritten at any time. Creating a new identity requires you to first become aware of your current identity story. What do you believe about who you are? What words do you use to describe yourself? What stories do you tell about your capabilities, your worth, and your possibilities? Most people have never consciously examined their identity story. So, they're unconsciously living out programming that may not serve their potential. Pay attention to the language you use when talking about yourself. Do you say, "I'm not good with money," or "I'm not a morning person," or "I'm not the type of person who takes risks"? These statements aren't descriptions of reality. They're declarations of identity that become self-fulfilling prophecies. Once you become aware of your current identity story, you can begin to consciously choose a new one. This isn't about lying to yourself or pretending to be someone you're not. It's about recognizing that identity is fluid and choosing to identify with your potential rather than your past. The most effective way to change your identity is through consistent action that aligns with who you want to become. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you are. When you keep a commitment to yourself, you're voting for being someone who's reliable. When you choose growth over comfort, you're voting for being someone who's committed to improvement. When you act with integrity, you're voting for being someone who's trustworthy. These identity votes might seem small in the moment, but they accumulate over time to create a new sense of self. As you consistently take actions that align with your desired identity, you begin to genuinely see yourself as that type of person. And once you truly identify as that type of person, the behaviors become automatic. Identity transformation also requires you to upgrade your environment and associations to match your new identity. If you want to identify as someone who's successful, start spending time around successful people. If you want to identify as someone who's healthy, surround yourself with people who prioritize health. If you want to identify as someone who's confident, distance yourself from people who reinforce insecurity and spend time with people who see your potential. Your environment and associations either support or undermine your new identity. If you're trying to see yourself as someone who deserves abundance while spending time with people who have scarcity mindsets, the contrast will make it difficult to maintain your new identity. But when you surround yourself with people who naturally operate from the identity you want to adopt, that identity becomes easier to maintain. Another powerful tool for identity transformation is future self-visualization. Regularly spend time imagining the person you're becoming and how that person thinks, feels, and acts. What does your future self believe about what they deserve? How do they handle challenges? What decisions do they make? How do they show up in relationships and opportunities? This isn't just daydreaming. This is mental rehearsal that helps you embody your new identity before it's fully developed. The more clearly you can imagine your future self, the easier it becomes to make decisions from that identity in the present moment. Identity transformation also requires you to celebrate evidence of your new identity rather than focusing on evidence of your old identity. When you act in alignment with who you're becoming, acknowledge and appreciate that growth. When you slip back into old patterns, treat it as information rather than evidence that change is impossible. Remember that identity transformation is not about becoming someone completely different. It's about becoming the fullest expression of who you truly are underneath all the programming and limitations. Your highest potential identity isn't foreign to you. It's the truest version of yourself that's been waiting for permission to emerge. The goal is to identify so completely with the person who naturally receives what you want that getting it becomes inevitable. When you truly see yourself as someone who deserves love, you naturally attract loving relationships. When you truly identify as someone who creates value, you naturally attract financial abundance. When you truly see yourself as someone who's worthy of respect, you naturally command respect from others. This identity transformation is the deepest and most lasting change you can make. When you change who you are at the core level, everything else changes to match that new identity. You don't have to force or struggle because you're simply being who you are. Chapter 11. The Strategic Patience Paradox. Why urgency repels what you want. One of the most counterintuitive principles of getting what you deserve is that desperation and urgency actually repel the very things you're trying to attract. When you need something too badly, when you're operating from a place of lack and scarcity, when you're pushing too hard to make things happen, you create an energy that makes opportunities, people, and resources want to move away from you rather than toward you. This creates what I call the strategic patience paradox. The more urgently you need something, the less likely you are to get it. The more desperately you want something, the more elusive it becomes. The harder you chase something, the faster it seems to run away from you. Understanding and applying this paradox is one of the most powerful tools for creating what you want in your life. Think about someone you know who's desperately looking for a romantic partner. They're on every dating app, going to every social event, and analyzing every interaction for romantic potential. They're so focused on finding someone that they become needy and desperate, which is exactly the energy that repels the kind of person they want to attract. Ironically, the moment they stop desperately searching and become content with their single life, they often meet someone wonderful. The same principle applies to money, career opportunities, and every other area of life. When you desperately need a job, employers can sense that desperation, and it makes you less attractive as a candidate. When you're frantically trying to make money, you make poor decisions driven by fear rather than strategy. When you're urgently pursuing any goal from a place of lack, you emit an energy that pushes away what you want. This doesn't mean you should be passive or stop taking action toward your goals. Strategic patience is not about being lazy or uncommitted. It's about taking consistent, focused action while maintaining an internal state of calm confidence rather than desperate urgency. It's about wanting something while not needing it, pursuing goals while being willing to let them go. The reason urgency repels what you want is that it communicates scarcity and fear. When you're desperate for something, you're essentially broadcasting the message that you don't currently have it and you're afraid you might never get it. This energy makes others want to protect themselves from your neediness rather than support your success. But when you approach your goals with strategic patience, you communicate abundance and confidence. You're essentially saying, "I know what I want. I'm taking action to create it. And I trust that it will happen in the right timing." This energy is magnetic because it feels safe and inspiring to be around. Strategic patience requires you to hold two seemingly contradictory states simultaneously. You must be completely committed to your goals while being completely unattached to the timeline and specific outcomes. You must take consistent action while being willing to let go of control over how and when results appear. This paradox is difficult for most people because they've been conditioned to believe that wanting something badly enough will help them get it. They think that urgency creates motivation and that desperation drives action. But urgency and desperation actually cloud your judgment, cause you to make poor decisions and create energy that repels what you want. Consider how this applies to money. When you desperately need money, you're likely to take any opportunity, regardless of whether it's a good fit, negotiate from weakness rather than strength, and make decisions based on immediate need rather than long-term value. This desperation often leads to choices that keep you trapped in financial struggle. But when you approach money with strategic patience, you can wait for the right opportunities, negotiate from a position of strength, and make decisions based on value rather than desperation. You're willing to say no to opportunities that don't align with your goals because you trust that better opportunities will come. The same principle applies to relationships. When you desperately need to be in a relationship, you're likely to settle for partners who aren't right for you, ignore red flags, and compromise your standards out of fear of being alone. This desperation often leads to relationships that reinforce your feelings of lack and unworthiness. But when you approach relationships with strategic patience, you can wait for someone who truly aligns with your values and desires, maintain your standards regardless of how long it takes, and choose partners based on compatibility rather than availability. You're willing to be alone rather than settle because you trust that the right person will come into your life. Developing strategic patience requires you to cultivate internal security that's not dependent on external outcomes. This means building confidence in your ability to handle whatever happens. Trust in the process of life and faith that good things are coming even when you can't see them yet. One of the most effective ways to develop strategic patience is to focus on the process rather than the outcome. Instead of being attached to getting specific results by specific deadlines, become attached to consistently taking the right actions and improving your capabilities. When you focus on process, you maintain control over what you can influence while releasing attachment to what you can't control. Strategic patience also requires you to develop multiple sources of fulfillment and security. When your entire sense of worth and happiness depends on achieving one specific goal, you'll naturally feel desperate about that goal. But when you have multiple sources of meaning, purpose, and satisfaction in your life, you can pursue any single goal with more detachment and patience. Another key component of strategic patience is learning to find evidence that things are working even when you don't yet have the final results you want. Look for signs of progress, small wins, and positive momentum rather than only measuring success by the ultimate outcome. This helps you maintain optimism and patience during the inevitable periods when progress feels slow. The goal is to become someone who wants things without needing them, who pursues goals without being attached to them, and who takes action from a place of abundance rather than scarcity. When you can maintain this state of strategic patience, you become magnetic to opportunities, people, and resources that can help you create what you want. Remember that everything you want is coming to you, but it's coming in the right timing and in the right way. Your job is to prepare yourself to receive it, take consistent action toward it, and trust the process while maintaining patience with the timing. This strategic patience is not just a nice philosophy. It's a practical tool that dramatically increases your ability to attract and create what you deserve. Chapter 12. The Setback Recovery Formula. Transforming obstacles into opportunities. Every person who has achieved something significant has faced setbacks, failures, and obstacles that seemed insurmountable at the time. The difference between those who ultimately succeed and those who give up is not the absence of setbacks but their response to setbacks. People who get what they deserve have mastered the art of transforming obstacles into opportunities and using setbacks as stepping stones rather than roadblocks. Most people have a fundamentally flawed relationship with setbacks. They see them as evidence that they're not capable, that their goals are unrealistic, or that they should give up and settle for less. They interpret obstacles as the universe telling them they're not meant to have what they want. They use setbacks as excuses to quit rather than reasons to recommit and refine their approach. But successful people understand that setbacks are not punishments or signs of failure. They're information, redirection, and preparation for what's coming next. They're the universe's way of building your strength, testing your commitment, and ensuring you're ready for the level of success you're pursuing. Think about a muscle that's being strengthened through resistance training. The resistance doesn't prevent the muscle from growing. The resistance is what causes the muscle to grow. Without resistance, the muscle would remain weak. The same principle applies to personal growth and achievement without obstacles to overcome. You would never develop the strength, skills, and character necessary to handle success. Every setback contains valuable information about what's not working and what needs to be adjusted. Instead of seeing setbacks as failures, successful people see them as data. They ask questions like, what can I learn from this? And how can I use this information to improve my approach, and what is this experience preparing me for? This shift in perspective transforms your entire relationship with challenges. Instead of being defeated by obstacles, you become curious about them. Instead of being discouraged by setbacks, you become grateful for the lessons they provide. Instead of seeing problems as evidence of failure, you see them as opportunities for growth and innovation. The setback recovery formula has several key components. First is the immediate response phase. When something goes wrong, your immediate response determines whether the setback becomes a temporary obstacle or a permanent roadblock. Most people respond to setbacks with emotional reactivity, self-criticism, and catastrophic thinking that makes the situation worse and clouds their judgment. Instead, develop the habit of pausing when setbacks occur. Take time to process the emotions without making them mean anything about your capability or future success. Allow yourself to feel disappointed, frustrated, or sad without turning those emotions into evidence that you should quit. Remember that feeling upset about a setback is normal and human, but it doesn't have to determine your next action. The second component is the analysis phase. Once you've processed the initial emotional reaction, shift into analytical mode. Look at what happened objectively without self-judgment or blame. What factors contributed to the setback? What was within your control and what wasn't? What assumptions did you make that turned out to be incorrect? What skills or knowledge do you need to develop to handle similar situations better in the future? This analysis phase is crucial because it transforms the setback from a meaningless negative experience into valuable learning that serves your future success. Every successful person has a collection of failures and setbacks that taught them essential lessons they couldn't have learned any other way. The third component is the adaptation phase. Based on what you learn from the analysis, how do you need to adjust your approach, strategy, or timeline? What new skills do you need to develop? What support do you need to seek? What assumptions do you need to challenge? How can you use this experience to become stronger, smarter, or more prepared for future challenges? Adaptation doesn't mean completely changing your goals or giving up on what you want. It means becoming more strategic and effective in your approach. Sometimes adaptation means taking a different path to the same destination. Sometimes it means adjusting your timeline to be more realistic. Sometimes it means developing new capabilities or seeking different kinds of support. The fourth component is the recommitment phase. After you've processed the emotions, analyzed the situation, and adapted your approach, you must recommit to your goals with even stronger resolve. Setbacks often reveal whether you truly want something or whether you were just casually interested in it. They separate the people who are committed from those who are merely curious. Recommitment after a setback is actually more powerful than initial commitment because it's based on a deeper understanding of what you're pursuing and why you want it. You've now faced challenges and chosen to continue anyway, which builds unshakable confidence in your dedication. Many of the greatest success stories in history include major setbacks that initially seemed like disasters but ultimately became the catalysts for breakthrough achievements. The business failure that taught essential lessons leading to future success. The job loss that forced someone to discover their true calling. The rejection that redirected someone toward a better opportunity. These stories aren't exceptions. They're the rule. Most significant achievements require you to overcome obstacles that test your resolve and build your capabilities. The setbacks aren't preventing your success. They're preparing you for it. Developing resilience also requires you to maintain perspective during difficult times. Remember that setbacks are temporary, but the strength and wisdom you gain from overcoming them are permanent. The person you become through facing challenges is far more valuable than any external achievement. It's also important to build a support system that helps you maintain perspective during setbacks. Surround yourself with people who believe in your potential and can remind you of your capabilities when you're struggling to see them yourself. Having mentors, coaches, or friends who have overcome similar challenges can provide both practical advice and emotional support. Finally, develop the habit of celebrating your resilience rather than just your achievements. Acknowledge yourself for getting back up after being knocked down. For learning from failures and for maintaining commitment despite obstacles. These character strengths are far more predictive of long-term success than any natural talent or favorable circumstances. Chapter 13. Maintenance Mode. Sustaining your new mindset. Long-term. Creating a new mindset is challenging, but sustaining it long-term is even more difficult. Most people experience what psychologists call the honeymoon phase of change, where new beliefs and behaviors feel exciting and transformative. But after a few weeks or months, the novelty wears off. Old patterns start to resurface and they gradually slip back into their previous way of thinking and being. This regression happens because changing your mindset is not a one-time event, but an ongoing practice that requires consistent maintenance. Just like physical fitness, mental and emotional fitness requires regular exercise to maintain. Just like a garden needs ongoing care to flourish, your new mindset needs ongoing attention to thrive. The challenge is that your old programming doesn't disappear just because you've developed new awareness. Those old neural pathways, limiting beliefs, and automatic reactions are still there, waiting for opportunities to reassert themselves during times of stress, fatigue, or challenge. It's natural to default back to familiar patterns unless you've built strong systems to maintain your new way of thinking. Understanding this reality is actually empowering because it allows you to prepare for it rather than being caught off guard when old patterns resurface. Instead of interpreting the return of old thoughts or behaviors as evidence that you haven't really changed, you can recognize it as a normal part of the transformation process and respond accordingly. Sustaining your new mindset requires you to build maintenance systems that become as automatic as your old patterns used to be. These systems should address the key areas where regression typically occurs. Your self-talk, your standards, your environment, your relationships, and your daily practices. Your internal dialogue is the foundation of your mindset, and it requires ongoing attention to maintain. Old patterns of self-criticism, doubt, and limitation can creep back in gradually if you're not actively monitoring and redirecting your self-talk. Build the habit of regularly checking in with your internal dialogue and consciously choosing thoughts that support your new identity and goals. This doesn't mean forcing positivity or denying reality when things are challenging. It means maintaining realistic optimism, speaking to yourself with the same kindness you would show a good friend, and focusing on possibilities and solutions rather than problems and limitations. Your standards also require ongoing maintenance because there's constant pressure from society, media, and even well-meaning people to lower your expectations and settle for less than what you deserve. Regularly remind yourself of your standards for how you want to be treated, what opportunities you'll accept, and what behavior you'll tolerate from yourself and others. Write down your standards and review them regularly. When you find yourself accepting less than what you've decided you deserve, use it as information rather than self-criticism. Gently redirect yourself back to your standards without shame or judgment. Your environment and relationships have enormous influence on your mindset, and they require ongoing curation to support your growth. As you change and evolve, some relationships may no longer align with who you're becoming. Some environments may feel increasingly limiting or negative. This is normal and doesn't necessarily mean those people or places are bad. It just means they're not supportive of your continued growth. Continuously evaluate whether your environment and relationships support or undermine your new mindset. Make gradual adjustments to spend more time in environments and with people who reinforce your positive changes and less time with influences that pull you back toward old patterns. Daily practices are essential for maintaining your new mindset because transformation happens through repetition, not inspiration. Identify the daily habits that most support your mental and emotional well-being and protect these practices even when life gets busy or challenging. These might include morning routines that set a positive tone for your day, evening practices that help you process experiences and maintain perspective, regular exercise that supports your energy and confidence, and ongoing learning that continues to expand your awareness and capabilities. The key is consistency rather than perfection. It's better to have simple practices that you do regularly than elaborate practices that you do sporadically. Even 5 minutes of intentional mindset work daily is more effective than hour-long sessions once a week. Expect and plan for periodic maintenance intensives. Just like your car needs regular tune-ups to continue running well, your mindset benefits from periodic deeper work to address any drift that has occurred and recommit to your growth trajectory. This might involve working with a coach or therapist, attending workshops or retreats, reading books that reinforce your new way of thinking, or simply taking time for deeper self-reflection and course correction. Don't wait until you've significantly regressed to do this maintenance work. Build it into your schedule as preventive care. It's also important to celebrate your progress regularly rather than only focusing on how far you still have to go. Acknowledge the positive changes you've made, the old patterns you've overcome, and the new capabilities you've developed. This celebration reinforces your new identity and provides motivation to continue growing. Remember that maintaining your new mindset is not about perfection, but about direction. You will have days when old patterns resurface, when you slip back into limiting thinking, or when you make choices that don't align with your highest self. This is part of being human, not evidence of failure. The goal is to catch these regressions more quickly and correct course more efficiently over time. Instead of spending weeks or months in old patterns before noticing, you begin to catch yourself in hours or days. Instead of harsh self-criticism when you notice regression, you respond with gentle redirection and recommitment. View the maintenance of your new mindset as an investment in your future self rather than a burden you have to carry. Every day you maintain your positive programming. You're building a stronger foundation for continued success and fulfillment. Every moment you choose growth over comfort. You're reinforcing neural pathways that will serve you for the rest of your life. Chapter 14. Advanced Manifestation. Aligning thoughts, emotions, and actions. The most powerful manifestation happens when your thoughts, emotions, and actions are completely aligned toward what you want to create. Most people experience internal conflict where part of them wants something while another part fears it, doubts it, or believes they don't deserve it. This misalignment creates mixed signals that prevent clear manifestation and lead to inconsistent results. True manifestation is not about magical thinking or hoping the universe will deliver what you want without effort. It's about creating such complete internal alignment that taking inspired action becomes natural and inevitable. Opportunities become visible that were previously hidden, and you develop the confidence and capability to recognize and seize those opportunities when they appear. The first level of alignment is mental. Your thoughts must consistently support what you want to create rather than undermining it. Most people sabotage their manifestation through contradictory thinking. They visualize success while simultaneously worrying about failure. They affirm abundance while focusing on scarcity. They declare their worthiness while reinforcing their limitations. Mental alignment requires you to become vigilant about your thought patterns and deliberately choose thoughts that support your desired outcomes. This doesn't mean denying reality or avoiding practical planning. It means maintaining a mental focus on possibilities and solutions rather than problems and obstacles. When you notice thoughts that contradict what you want to create, don't fight them or judge yourself for having them. Simply acknowledge them and consciously choose different thoughts. Over time, this practice creates new neural pathways that naturally support your goals rather than undermining them. The second level of alignment is emotional. Your feelings must match what you want to create rather than contradicting it. Emotions are incredibly powerful because they determine your energy and vibration, which affects how you show up in the world and what you attract into your experience. If you want to manifest abundance, but you feel stressed and anxious about money, those emotions will drive actions that create more stress and scarcity. If you want to manifest love, but you feel unworthy and fearful, those emotions will attract situations that reinforce unworthiness and fear. Emotional alignment doesn't mean forcing yourself to feel positive emotions all the time. It means learning to process negative emotions quickly and return to emotional states that support what you want to create. It means cultivating genuine feelings of gratitude, excitement, and expectation about your goals rather than just thinking about them intellectually. One powerful technique for emotional alignment is to regularly spend time feeling as if you already have what you want. Not just visualizing it, but actually generating the emotions you would feel if your desired outcome was already real. This emotional rehearsal helps your subconscious mind accept your goals as achievable and motivates actions that make them more likely to manifest. The third level of alignment is behavioral. Your actions must consistently support what you want to create rather than contradicting it. Many people want one thing but do another. They want financial abundance but spend impulsively. They want meaningful relationships but don't invest time in developing connection skills. They want career success but don't take actions that build their professional capabilities. Behavioral alignment means making choices that move you toward your goals even when those choices are uncomfortable or inconvenient. It means saying no to opportunities that don't align with your vision and yes to activities that support your growth. It means developing habits and routines that reinforce your desired identity and outcomes. This alignment between thoughts, emotions, and actions creates what I call a manifestation momentum where each element reinforces the others. Positive thoughts generate positive emotions which inspire positive actions which create positive results which reinforce positive thoughts. This creates an upward spiral that accelerates your progress toward what you want to create. Advanced manifestation also requires you to develop what spiritual teachers call detached attachment. This means being completely committed to what you want while being completely unattached to how and when it manifests. This paradoxical state allows you to take inspired action without desperation and maintain positive emotions without being dependent on immediate results. Detached attachment prevents the neediness and urgency that often repel what you want to manifest. When you're attached to specific outcomes happening in specific ways at specific times, you create resistance that slows down manifestation. But when you're committed to the essence of what you want while remaining flexible about the details, you allow manifestation to happen in ways that might be even better than what you originally imagined. Another key component of advanced manifestation is learning to receive. Many people are skilled at asking for what they want, but terrible at recognizing and accepting it when it arrives. They're so focused on what they don't have that they miss opportunities, gifts, and support that are already present in their lives. Develop the skill of recognition by regularly looking for evidence that your manifestations are already beginning to appear. Notice small synchronicities, unexpected opportunities, helpful people, and positive changes that might be early signs of larger manifestations. Celebrate these small evidences rather than dismissing them as coincidences. Advanced manifestation also requires you to trust divine timing rather than forcing your personal timeline. Sometimes what you want is delayed because you're not ready for it yet, because better opportunities are coming, or because other elements need to align first. Learning to trust this process while continuing to take inspired action is essential for stress-free manifestation. Finally, advanced manifestation includes understanding that the process of pursuing your goals is just as important as achieving them. The person you become while manifesting what you want is often more valuable than the manifestation itself. Every goal you pursue transforms you in ways that prepare you for even greater possibilities. Focus on aligning your thoughts, emotions, and actions with what you want to create. Take inspired action from a place of excitement rather than desperation. Trust the process while remaining committed to the outcome. And remember that everything you're seeking is also seeking you. And the alignment of your thoughts, emotions, and actions creates the conditions for that meeting to occur. Chapter 15. Living Your New Reality, Stepping Fully Into Your Power. You've now journeyed through a complete transformation of how you think about what you deserve and what's possible for your life. You understand that your limitations were learned rather than inherent, that your worth comes from within rather than from external validation, and that you have the power to create whatever reality aligns with your highest potential. But understanding these principles intellectually is only the beginning. The real transformation happens when you step fully into living from this new reality. Living your new reality means no longer seeing yourself as someone who's trying to change, but as someone who has already changed. It means operating from your new identity so consistently that your old limitations become just memories of who you used to be. It means making decisions, setting standards, and taking actions from the place of already being the person who naturally receives what they deserve. This transition from becoming to being is crucial because it's where most people get stuck. They understand the principles. They experience temporary shifts. They see glimpses of their potential, but they never fully commit to living from their new reality. They keep one foot in their old identity and one foot in their new identity, which creates internal conflict and prevents complete transformation. Stepping fully into your power requires you to burn the bridges back to your old way of being. This doesn't mean being harsh with yourself about past limitations or pretending they never existed. It means making a definitive decision that you're no longer available for the experiences, relationships, and circumstances that reflected your old programming. When you truly step into your new reality, you stop explaining or defending your growth to people who aren't ready to see it. You stop apologizing for wanting more or achieving success. You stop shrinking yourself to make others comfortable with their own limitations. You recognize that your job is not to manage other people's reactions to your transformation, but to live authentically from your highest self. This level of authenticity can feel uncomfortable at first because it requires you to risk disapproval from people who preferred you to stay small. Some relationships may change or end as you outgrow them. Some opportunities may no longer feel aligned as your standards rise. Some environments may feel increasingly limiting as your perspective expands. But these changes, while sometimes challenging, are signs that your transformation is real and complete. You can't become a new person while maintaining all the same relationships, circumstances, and patterns that supported your old identity. Growth requires evolution, and evolution sometimes means leaving behind what no longer serves your highest good. Living your new reality also means taking full responsibility for everything in your experience without victimizing yourself or others. You recognize that even challenging experiences are opportunities for growth and that you always have the power to choose your response regardless of your circumstances. This responsibility is empowering rather than burdensome because it means you're never powerless. Even when external events are beyond your control, your internal response is always within your control. And your internal response determines your experience and influences your future more than any external circumstance. As you live from your new reality, you'll notice that what once seemed impossible begins to feel inevitable. Opportunities that would have intimidated your old self now feel exciting and manageable. Relationships that would have felt out of reach now feel natural and deserved. Financial abundance that once seemed reserved for others now feels like a logical result of your value and contributions. This shift happens because you're no longer operating from the energy of need, desperation, or inadequacy. You're operating from the energy of worthiness, confidence, and abundance. This energy is magnetic and attractive, drawing to you the people, opportunities, and resources that match your new vibration. Living your new reality also means becoming a source of inspiration and possibility for others rather than someone who seeks inspiration from external sources. When you fully stepped into your power, you naturally uplift others by your example. You show them what's possible simply by being who you've become. This doesn't mean becoming arrogant or superior. It means becoming so secure in your own worth and capability that you can genuinely celebrate others' success, support their growth, and model what's possible without feeling threatened or competitive. The ripple effects of your transformation extend far beyond your personal experience. As you live from your new reality, you give others permission to do the same. Your willingness to claim what you deserve makes it easier for others to claim what they deserve. Your refusal to settle for less than your potential inspires others to raise their own standards. Remember that living your new reality is not a destination, but a continuous practice. You'll continue to grow, evolve, and expand throughout your life. New levels of success will require new levels of personal development. New opportunities will demand new capabilities. New challenges will call forth new strengths. But you now have the foundation, tools, and understanding to navigate any challenge and create any reality you desire. You know that you deserve everything you want and that you have the power to create it. You understand that limitations exist primarily in thinking rather than in reality and that you can change your thinking at any time. You've learned that success is not about being perfect but about being persistent. It's not about never failing but about failing forward. It's not about having all the answers, but about being willing to learn and grow. It's not about being fearless, but about being courageous enough to act despite your fears. Most importantly, you've discovered that you are far more powerful, capable, and deserving than you ever imagined. The life you've dreamed of is not only possible but inevitable when you consistently live from the truth of who you really are. Your journey of transformation is complete. But your journey of creation is just beginning. You now have everything you need to claim what you deserve, create what you desire, and become who you're meant to be. The only question that remains is what will you choose to create first? The world is waiting for your unique gifts, contributions, and expression. You deserve to live extraordinarily, and you now have the power to make it happen. Step fully into your new reality. Claim your power and create the life that's been waiting for you to believe you deserve it.